This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high above the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
With midterm elections coming up, politicians are taking off the gloves. A man is hit by five cars trying to walk across the I-5. And a St. Petersburg home invasion involves guns and butter.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, I give you Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, October 5th, 2010. A man trying to walk across Interstate 5 in the Rose Quarter area was struck by five vehicles and killed early this morning. It happened just before 2 a.m. near the split onto Interstate 205 and just north of the exit to Interstate 84. Witnesses said the man walked across the northbound lanes, and then he was hit several times in the southbound lanes. At least two of the vehicles that hit him were large trucks. The man died at the scene. Police have not released his name, pending notification of relatives. All the drivers stopped and cooperated with police. None of them were injured, and no citations were issued.
I'm trying to figure out exactly where this was. So this was heading northbound. So this is if you're coming from... the west side and you're going over, what was it, on a bridge or something?
It's in the Rose Quarter area, just north of the exit to 84. So you know where it splits off to go to 84?
Sure,
once
not really.
Once you get past like the Coliseum and the Rose Quarter area there.
I guess.
When you're coming this way, when you're coming towards town, there's that whole area where
coming
it splits.
Coming towards town. When you're trucking in from the country on the back of a hay wagon.
As I am wont to do.
When you're going to the big city to buy yourself some dungarees.
When I hitch up my wagon.
At the Macy's.
And come into city to go to the general store, yes. There's that that split where you have to get into the left side or the right side or the middle side, which the middle lane, which goes either way. And that's 84. And then that is the
So
split.
This is on the highway?
Yes, on I-5. The guy was crossing I-5.
Oh, he was actually trying to cross. Okay, so this wasn't like, I guess I was thinking it was somehow down by that by the Rose Quarter, sort of by MLK, and where, you know, where it splits, and there's that huge, that thing looks like a grain refinery or whatever that place is down
there. By using the words Rose Quarter, befuddled you.
Exactly, so I was totally perplexed by that. Okay, so he was actually crossing the highway itself.
Yes.
How would you even get there?
Well, maybe his car broke down, or he was some crazy homeless guy, or I don't know.
Crazy homeless guy.
It could happen. We have a few of those
here
in town.
Picturing just a stock photograph of a guy with big, like, googly eyes and a scruffy beard, sort of looking out like Alfred Packer.
Playing his ukulele.
We're not saying that the man was a crazy homeless guy who was playing a ukulele. That's not that's just speculation on our part. That's an artistic flight of fancy. That's a fictionalized version of events, not unlike not unlike a Sorkinian screenplay.
Although someone on the text box suggested I read the story again with Yakety Sax behind it.
Okay. Let's not do that. I am in fact, glad that you... Glad is the wrong way to put it. I am glad that I held back my comments and reactions until I heard the phrase, and was killed. Because initially it just sounded like sort of a, you know, wow, wow, pump, 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 you know. Each of the pumps, there was a car.
Maybe he was playing live-action Frogger.
See, that's you who said that, not me. Rick Emerson didn't make that observation. I didn't. That wasn't a phrase that left my mouth. I wouldn't traffic in such humor.
Oh!
But then, see, but now I couldn't come up with something else, and it's like the more I wanted to come up with another phrase, the more I couldn't find one.
You don't want
to
drive that one into the ground.
I think you hit the nail on the head.
Yes.
Yeah, see, that doesn't work.
No,
the third one didn't
all.
Really fell apart there. All right.
Okay.
You're listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Thank you for joining us, I guess. If you would like to receive this program on your mobile device, you can do so. It's mobile.pdx.fm on your BlackBerry, your iPhone, your Android-based listening unit, whatever it is you might have. Mobile.pdx.fm. It's also available via iTunes later on in the day or as a direct MP3 download at legionofnews.com or at pdx.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
With just a moment...
I don't truck with such humor.
Ah, there we go.
All right. Better late
than
never.
That was semi-amusing.
All right.
No, wait.
That's what I aim for.
With just a month to go before the midterm elections, politicians are pulling off the gloves, making accusations, and generally lambasting each other. Senator Bernie Sanders, an independent from Vermont, during an appearance on CBS's Face the Nation, accused Republicans of obstructing the legislative process in Congress for the past year and a half, calling them the party of no.
I'm on the floor of the Senate. And I got to tell you, every single day, it's 60 votes to pass legislation. That is unprecedented in American history.
That guy sounds like Ron Silver. Hmm. Hey, is actor Ron Silver dead?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, he died, like, what, last year, I think it was? It was rather unexpected and very sad.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things where... I'll do this thing sometimes that I think is just because there's too much information in the world, and if I were to hold on to all of it, my brain would just, I wouldn't be able to store any new facts, so I have to forget stuff every now and again. I have to do a purge. But as a result, it's sort of like I have a very, 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 very early stage Alzheimer's, where I'm constantly sort of relearning of the deaths of celebrities, even though they died 2 or 3 years ago, and I, in fact, I covered the story. I, in fact, spent a whole day perhaps pondering their demise and ruminating on the legacy that they've left. And so last night, I happened to see Ron Silver in something, and I thought, what a fine American actor is Ron Silver. I can't wait to see him in a new, and then like a little red light went on in the back of my brain.
There will be no more Ron Silver. My husband and I always say his name, Ron Silver, because of an episode of, the series about the producer.
You're talking about Skin?
No, older with,
Okay, you can't, you're not actually giving me details when you say, oh crap. You're just saying the
same
thing.
We've talked about this series over and over again. And
sounds like?
Blonde guy, he's a producer, he's a complete bastard.
You're talking about Action?
Action, yes. There was this episode of Action where he, when he's started, his fortunes are starting to fade, and he tries to get a table in a restaurant.
Right.
And the snotty maitre d' guy is telling him that he can't give him a table. And then that he seats somebody else. He says, well, you're seating that guy. He says, oh, sir, that is Ron Silver.
Yeah.
And he says, he directed The Matrix.
No, you're thinking of Joel Silver.
Joel Silver. Well, we still always said Ron Silver's name that way, too.
Okay.
Wow.
The point is he won't be making any more films because he's dead.
That was the worst anecdote ever.
The great thing is you spent a long time laboring to come up with a fact that was inaccurate.
I know.
Hold on a second. Let me set aside 2 minutes of valuable airtime to come up with a name which is wrong for the story that I am telling.
And tomorrow I'll spend a half an hour explaining why I always get Merv Griffin and Mike Douglas mixed up.
And the best part is it's actually happening inside an alleged news program to which you can turn for edification, my friends. All right, here is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Do you want to hear more about Bernie Sanders?
Yes, I do.
Ah, well, he says Republicans aren't interested in the issues that are important to most Americans.
I would say that given the choice between regaining power or obstructing the initiatives that create jobs, that protect the American people, yes, I think gaining power is their major initiative.
Well, it's more fun to obstruct things. I mean, really, constructing things or sort of helping to create things that are beneficial or...
You know, building up is never as much fun as tearing down. That's just a, that is an indisputable fact. That's just, it's irrefutable, I think. It's science.
And, you know, it's not like the Democrats, you know, are
they're really turning the country
of doing
around.
That. Yeah. Well, it's also, it's not like they don't do the same thing when they have the opportunity.
They're just no good at it.
Vote down whatever, yeah.
That's, you know, that's the thing. Is that the Democrats just,
They would vote down all the Republicans' bills, except they're concerned about their feelings.
Yeah, I think the Democrats are, you know, they are sort of the cowardly lion, you know, in this scenario. They just have no ability. They're kind of a toothless sloth. They really have no, they're a purely defensive party. So I think they are sort of intimidated by / jealous of the Republicans' ability to be innately evil and just to not even blink at it.
Kentucky's two U.S. Senate candidates debated on Fox News Sunday. Democrat Jack Conway was asked about campaign ads, and he reported comments depicting his opponent Rand Paul as crazy.
I'm not saying Dr. Paul's crazy. I think...
I'll say Dr.
Paul's crazy. I think some of his ideas are out of the mainstream and they're out of touch with the values of normal Kentuckians.
All right. I'm not saying he's crazy, you know, per se.
Yeah. No, he's crazy. His dad's crazy. He's crazy.
The whole family of crazies there. Well, he's from Kentucky. You're listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. This is Don Taylor.
A man allegedly tried to break into a home was shot in the leg by a homeowner in Rock Creek. Police said it happened Monday night around 8:15 on Edgebrook, Northwest Edgebrook. The Sergeant David Thompson of the Washington County Sheriff's Office said that the man, whose name has not been released, was allegedly acting strangely in the neighborhood earlier, prompting several calls to 911. The man was brought to an area hospital, and the investigation is ongoing. So, yeah, he was acting strangely. Then he tried to break into somebody's home, and the homeowner shot him in the leg.
And this was where?
Rock Creek.
I don't know where that is.
That's northwest. You know where the Rock Creek, there's a McMenamin's Rock Creek, like roadhouse kind of a bar. It's way the heck out there.
No.
It's on your way to Beaverton.
It's on my way to a better place and a better life.
Yes.
No. Really, if I ever have to go to the suburbs, I mean, and I have to travel to Beaverton, I mean, the Outlook Portland is there, and then I seem to know a great number. It's almost as if the good Lord has punished me by... planting a lot of my friends, you know, like in suburbs or on the other side of suburbs. But my goal, you know, is always just to spend as little as time in suburban areas as possible. So if I ever have to go there, I just speed to my destination and then I speed home, trying not to stop.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you just find yourself in an endless maze of streets with names like Gumdrop Avenue and, you know, and like Dewfall Lane. And you know.
Yeah, no. my book club I go to once a month that I refer to as Mormon Book Club, because
yes.
Everyone is Mormon except for two of us. It's in Hillsboro. And I thought Hillsboro, I always think of Hillsboro as being like sort of right next door to Beaverton.
No.
So like, I'm like, oh, just drive up the freeway and go
not
to
next
Beaverton.
Next door to anything.
Every month I go there and every month I forget how damn far away it is.
Oh, you're just driving and driving and then you're convinced that you've missed it?
Yeah.
You're just going, I think I missed the, do we have a GPS? Was the turnoff back there? And then you see like Hillsboro, 17 miles ahead. And you
it's
go,
so
Christ.
Far away.
Yeah, no, it's... Well, so you went to the Tim Riley's Thanksgiving thing.
Yeah.
Going to Tannisbourne is the same thing, where you're just driving and it just, I mean, and you're thinking there's nothing, I'm just going to fall off the edge of the world. There's nothing out here. There can be no more cities. We've run out. And then you see that you're like halfway there.
Well, then he lives in this weird little Truman Show community.
He really does.
Of these perfect looking like row houses with these perfect little like London in the Mary Poppins movie fences in front of all of them, and it's
Tim lives in a sort of Tim Riley lives in a like a sort of full size version of some of those little houses that are on the sides of railroad tracks. Like on the railroad setups that guys run in their garage.
Yeah.
You know, where he's gone to the hobby store and he's like, one cottage row house, please. You know, and they hand it to him. That's where Tim lives.
I honestly expected to like turn and go around the corner and find like Disneyland's Main Street.
Yeah.
It was bizarre. Rutgers University held a vigil Sunday night for Tyler Clementi, the freshman who killed himself after his sexual encounter with another man was broadcast online. Rutgers Vice President of Student Affairs Greg Brimley says it's an unfortunate tragedy.
To help support the Clemente family and Rutgers, and I hope that this bullying and harassment...
Hold on, is this in fact the superintendent of... Is that how you identify this?
No, he's the Vice President of Student Affairs, so I guess he is a student,
okay,
but it sounds like he's 12.
I'm not saying the story itself is not worthy of seriousness.
He's a college student, and he sounds like he's 11 years old.
Clearly it is. And also, it also helps me in terms of reaching some sort of... some sort of silver comedic lining to this that I thought you identified him as the president of Rutgers. I don't know why I heard that. Maybe my brain was just trying to make it even, trying to, you know, to sort of help us laugh through the tears by the buzz. So I was just picturing a guy sitting behind a huge mahogany desk, but he's like Ralph Wiggum.
Help support the Clemente family and Rutgers. And
not actually the president.
This bullying and harassment will stop.
Maybe he's like one of those Asian kids who's 12 years old but is already halfway to a PhD or something.
It's an unfortunate tragedy, but it's also unfortunate that they couldn't find anyone with a little more gravitas to actually speak to the media.
Just have James Earl Jones stand in for him.
Brimley says the incident has hit everyone at Rutgers hard.
Him and everyone else should be able to live the life that they want to live without fear of things like this happening.
He didn't really sound like a Rutgers student either. Are they
don't
sure?
Don't you have to know grammar to go to an Ivy League college? Is Rutgers Ivy League? I don't know, but it's up there. It's
a place
good
that
college.
Almost certainly wouldn't accept me as a student, so that counts. Okay. Well, there
this
you
is,
go.
This is what happens in a world where kids are allowed to use spell checkers in their placement tests.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Yes. There's a third one, but let's just save that for later. You're listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes up today at 1 o'clock. We will have a variety of news stories for your dialing and dancing pleasure later on today. We'll talk more about our Geek-O-Lantern Carving Contest, which is happening all through the month of October, via which we will be giving... Yes?
What are the circumstances in which people are dialing and dancing?
It's just a thing.
Okay.
It's a PBS reference. It's a thing from a PBS show that used to be on like 10, 12 years ago.
Oh.
Where it wasn't a pledge drive thing, but it was one of those, the PBS used to have this show that was sort of like Lawrence Welk, but they focused more heavily on the dancing aspect than the music aspect. But then they would also do these kind of fundraising sort of a things. And it was like for some local, like a ballroom dancing committee or something. And it's just a 1%. It's not even a 1% joke. It's like a 0.003% joke.
Okay.
And there was a guy who was sort of like a Portland version of Lawrence Welk. And he would say, today we'll be dialing and dancing, my friends. And then, and then somebody would strike up, they would start singing Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree or whatever. And then a bunch of old people would come and they would spin under the floor like they were at an ice cream social.
Oh.
And it's a thing I say because somewhere in the audience, there is one guy who is dialing and dancing. I love that show. Whatever.
Okay. Doesn't matter. Thank you for taking the time to explain it to me.
It's the same reason why if you're watching Cannibal the Musical with Trey Parker and Matt Stone, there's a sequence where Alfred Packer is having this weird ballet dream, and then he sits straight up, and he wakes up from the nightmare, and he's just, Ike! Which is, apparently some joke that, if you really, really spend a lot of time at the University of Colorado Libraries Alfred Packer files and read through the diaries kept by the people who'd gone on the trip, there's a reference to somebody saying Ike at one point. And so Trey Parker actually took the time to write that into a script and film it because he said that somewhere in the world one guy would see that and laugh. Which perhaps explains why some of those things have a niche appeal. Anyway, so the Rick Emerson Show coming up today at 1 o'clock. We'll talk more about our Geek-O-Lantern Carving Contest happening all through the month of October. We'll have another installment of the greatest songs ever made and whatnot. This is Don Taylor.
Police are investigating a home invasion in St. Petersburg in which a woman and her teenage son were bound with duct tape and their home ransacked. St. Petersburg police say two armed men approached the woman outside her home Monday night as she returned from work. They showed her their guns and forced their way into the residence. Police say they bound the woman's 15-year-old son with duct tape and forced her to boil butter, which they then made her pour on herself. The woman was then also bound. Investigators say the men left with two weapons and iPods found in the home.
I wonder if that's just because they happened to see something on the Science Channel about butter and singeing and burning or whatever and just decided to try it out while they were there.
It seems like a very specific and very odd thing.
It almost seems like a fetish crime, doesn't it?
It does.
Almost like they were just watching seeing some sort of weird Dairy Crush video or something, and they decided they had to act it out in real life. I mean, I'm not trying to mock the woman's pain. It sucks.
No, but I'm trying not to laugh too hard at the idea of a Dairy Crush video.
It didn't really make any sense. I mean, because you can see one guy having the idea.
Yeah.
Unless the other guy was just sort of, he was just sort of easily manipulated and said, well, whatever. I mean, we got a few minutes to kill. Sure, go ahead. It just doesn't seem to make any sense.
I mean, yeah.
Well, whatever.
I don't know.
You are listening to Legion of News at PDX.fm. This is Don Taylor.
A station wagon smashed through the front of a store in Vancouver Monday afternoon, causing extensive damage. There were three people inside the Subaru when it crashed, but no one was seriously injured. The American Medical Store, where the crash occurred, is located on Andreessen Road. No one inside the store was injured either. No word yet on why the driver crashed into the storefront.
So somebody went in through the street facing side of the store into the store proper?
Yeah, there was the floor to ceiling windows, one of those stores that it was just like a solid big glass window in the front window, and yeah, the driver just went all the way through the window into the store.
And it's in Vancouver?
Yes.
Well, you don't typically think of Vancouver as being one of those places just filled with old people. But in my experience, old people are almost always at the root of this. Unless you were the guy who sat next to me in driver's ed class when I was, so I guess I would have been 15 and a half, maybe a sophomore, I guess. And there was a guy named, I won't give his last name because he's probably spent the intervening years trying to block this out of his memory and everyone's memory. But there was a guy named John who sat next to me. I was sandwiched between these two guys in driver's ed. One was a guy named Richard, who came back to school after a protracted period of absence because, I swear to Christ, he hacked up his mom with a machete.
Seriously?
Yeah. And it was one of those things that, like, you think is an urban legend, but it's not, because, like, the guy actually sat next to me in class and, you know, at one point he himself proactively brought it up. He's like, well, you know, when I was in the juvie center after that whole thing with my mom and the machete.
Oh, my God. And they just sent him back to school.
Well, he didn't kill her. It was just a maiming. It was an advanced disfiguring, but not death. And then he wanted to spend a lot of time just talking to me about Led Zeppelin for some reason. It was the weirdest thing.
Was this one of those, like, remedial, like, bad kids classes?
No. I mean, only in the sense that it was filled with a lot of dirtbags, but it wasn't designed to be that way. That's just Kennewick. Uh-huh. The detail from that, the whole macheteing that I remember, is that he actually stopped and made a point of putting on a Pink Floyd record beforehand. He'd been doing a lot of acid or something, and it was a whole weird thing. His name was Richard, and he was one of those guys. Did you ever see those guys, and this is like an 80s thing specifically, where they had mullets, but it was like the hair is sort of the hair on top of the head, you know, the short sort of, you know, business part of the mullet, is real sort of like, it has a lot of body to it. It's real sort of puffy. And then the mullet itself, the long sort of, you know, the mud flap part in the back, is not that long, and it's almost got like a kink to it, and it kind of sticks straight out. It's just the weirdest. I'm trying to think of somebody, like a celebrity, that has that kind of mullet, but that's difficult to do these days. Anyway, so I've been doing a lot of acid, Pink Floyd, Mom, the machete.
Wow.
Yeah, he drops the acid. He, you know, attacks his mom. So I was sandwiched between that guy and a guy named John, who during, one of his things where the teacher takes you out and, you know, and the teacher says, okay, drive straight until instructed to turn. Now you're going to bank to the left and you're going to go down, Pine Street. And he drove through the front of a True Value hardware store that was in downtown Kennewick, because it was one of those things where they had the angled in parking downtown, and in so-called the busy business district of downtown Kennewick, it's just a whole bunch of storefront buildings or street front buildings where, again, it's the glass walls that go all the way down, and there's no real curb. The sidewalks are real low. So they have him angling in, and it's that thing where he's easing off the gas, easing off the brake, easing off the... right through the front of I keep trying to say Fred Meyer, but it's a True Value hardware store. And he went directly into the store with the school's traffic safety car. And that's a thing that even in a pre-internet era and before cell phones, that trafficked through the entire school. And by the time he came back, everyone in class knew that John was the guy who had driven into a hardware store with the car. It was awesome.
I had a kid I went to school with. He was the mayor's son. The way our town was set up, it's like you had a city council and everyone sort of rotated through and took turns being mayor, apparently. And his dad was currently mayor, and he got his license. And like 2 weeks after he got his license, he drove his father's Mercedes into one of over the curb and into one of those concrete bus benches.
Yeah,
and it got like jammed on the bus bench. because I think he was going to try and back it away and probably drive away or something, and he couldn't move it. And so they had to actually not only call the a tow truck, but there was like a photo of it in the paper.
That's almost impressive, actually, that you're able to get a car sort of lodged onto that thing, because those are several feet off the ground.
Yeah, I think it was one of those things that kind of went up onto like the arm of the concrete thing, and it got jammed under the bumper. And yeah, he didn't live that down either, and it's like, you know.
I won't give this kid's real last name, but I will say he had a doubly unfortunate life because his first name was John, and his last name, it wasn't this, but it sounded a lot like Merrick. And so if you are effectively named after the Elephant Man to begin with, and then also, you know, the first time they let you take the wheel of a car, you actually put the, and I don't know who has to pay for that. I don't know if that's a thing where they hit the kid's parents for it. Like, if your kid puts a driver's ed car through the front of a hardware store downtown, I mean, even in Kennewick, that's going to be tens of dollars of damage there that somebody has to fix.
Well, yeah, and then the school is liable to a certain extent because, you know,
It's a whole thing. You are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM, where we want to just F. That's just the... that's the non-family-friendly version of the broadcast, where we want to welcome a brand new business partner that is Squires Electric. SquiresElectric.com is the website for those guys. SquiresElectric.com. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They've been in Portland for 12 years. And Joe Squires is actually born here. He grew up in Washougal. I mentioned this yesterday, actually, that he probably tomorrow or Thursday, he's going to sit in on the Rick Emerson Show with us, and I'm going to make him talk about being on a nuclear submarine.
I'm just going to ask him questions about things like amps.
And just ask him about amps and voltages and milliwatts.
Exactly. Things that I'm making a list of electrical things I don't understand. I'm just going to ask them.
We should do something. We should do like some sort of like a Mr. Wizard Apollo 13 thing where we just have a bunch of, where we have him build something for us.
That would be great.
We should ask him to bring a series of electrical components and just see if he can fashion them into something right here.
Or we could do that experiment where you stick wires into the light socket and put it on a potato and see if you can make the potato glow in the dark.
Is that a thing that you can really do?
I might be conflating a couple of different
experiments.
You
can't make a potato glow in the dark.
There's something to do with, like, a potato.
Are you talking about the thing where you run the clock off the potato? Where you have, like, the potato sits in a thing of water, and then you plug electrodes in it, and then it powers something?
That might be. I might be combining two different experiments in my head.
All right. Well, in any event.
I'm thinking of that thing. I think you can bake a potato from the inside. If you put wires in an electrical outlet and jam the wires into a potato. But I will say, you probably shouldn't.
You didn't have cable at your house growing up, did you? Just sort of out of fabricating your own amusements.
And I was an only child with a lot of time on my hands.
This conversation really is, this is sort of prima facie evidence as to why most people, and by most people I mean Dawn and I specifically, but probably you as well, let's be honest, ought not mess with the wiring in your home. You have a professional come do that. Because otherwise, you will end up being reduced to 12-point Helvetica type on a page that Dawn is holding, and we will mock your death.
Even if you do have a potato, it'll still be unpleasant.
Yeah, it doesn't. It really doesn't matter. Yeah, we'll just be here snickering about your untimely demise, and then we'll just move on to another Ron Silver anecdote. So, electrical wiring of any kind, whether it's Ethernet wiring or anything that has been put into the house, put into your business, or that you need maintained, repaired, removed, and there's a lot of houses in Portland that are like, you know, other than 50 years old, and it's like, you know, you don't want to be screwing around with that. It leads to disaster. So it's something you don't really think about until it doesn't work. Until you need it maintained or until you need it fixed or installed, and that's when you call Squires Electric. 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. And I've said that thing a few times about how, you know, there's no job too small. They'll do a single light socket, which is actually not, I'm not making that up. They really did. There's a guy, actually, that they just did an entire, a big office building for a guy. It's like three stories or something. But they first worked for the guy like 5 years ago when they went to his house literally to fix a single electrical outlet. And then a few years later, the guy was actually so impressed that he had them come wire a three-story building that he was putting up. So if it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they make your life easier. You can contact them at SquiresElectric.com, 503-252-1609. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our science news.
Here's science on the march. Which seems now more and more like a segment specifically constructed for the sole purpose of passing along disinformation to a gullible public.
Well, we'll see what we can do.
Someone has to do it.
Russians Andrei Geim and Konstantin Novoselov have been awarded the Nobel Prize in Physics for their research into graphene, a carbon wonder material that resembles nanoscale chicken wire and is predicted to eventually replace silicon in supercomputers. Because it is believed to transmit faster and withstand more heat than silicon, scientists say that graphene could be the ideal material for next-generation circuitry. Graphene is not only the world's thinnest material, it's also the strongest. The New York Times writes that a sheet of it stretched over a coffee cup could support the weight of a truck bearing down on a pencil point.
How would you calculate that that is, in fact, the equivalent to the strength, that that is the best way to demonstrate how, the resilience of the material?
Probably with some kind of a machine that has a pointy thing and presses down on it with X pounds of
weight. A machine that has a pointy thing.
Yes, Rick. A pointy thing.
All right.
Is that like a pencil point, a machine thing.
That's exactly how it's described in the patent, I'm sure. What I got here is your machine with a pointy thing. And then you got your Hoosits that goes into the side, and also your, hey, do you know my
and
voice...
And your Framus gadgets.
My voice recognition software recognizes the word thingamajig.
But probably not Hoosits.
I was dictating something the other day, and I said it in a non... Like, I wasn't trying to see if the machine knew it, and I wasn't being ironic. I actually said it without thinking. I said, and so this will allow us to put some metal grating over the thingamajig. And then I looked down at the screen, and I'll be goddamned if it didn't just type over the thingamajig. And that's where you realize you have to choose your words carefully. And then I just found myself saying, like, whatchamacallit, and it knew whatchamacallit, too. It's freaking me out. All right, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Geim and Novoselov began investigating the material at the University of Manchester, where they discovered that they could create atom-thin pieces of carbon simply by cutting pencil lead with scotch tape. In 2004, they published a paper on the study and attracted attention throughout the scientific community. Carbon, the basis of all known life on Earth, the Royal Academy wrote in the statement, has surprised us once again.
What do you mean they were cutting pencil lead with scotch tape?
That's what it says.
Did they give any further explanation for that statement?
No, not in this particular piece here, no.
Sometimes I say...
They probably mean more like shaving. They had scotch tape and they were shaving pencil lead.
How can you shave something with scotch tape?
You'd probably hold it taut and drag it along the pencil lead. And then you would look under a microscope and see what you had shaved off.
Oh, okay. So this isn't really shaving... I guess they're making something an atom thick. I guess it's not really shaving in the sense that it's not cutting. It's really just you're sort of sloughing off individual atoms.
Yes.
Into a pile. Okay.
In a scientific breakthrough that stands to improve the lives of school teachers and street cleaners, British researchers have debuted a non-sticky chewing gum that dissolves within a day of use and can be easily sprayed away with water. Developers at the University of Bristol say that Rev7 has the same taste and texture as normal gum, except that it's biodegradable and will actually come out if it ends up in places it shouldn't. The motivation to invent the product came from seeing chewing gum on streets in this country and in America, inventor Terry Cosgrove told The Telegraph. It's everywhere. Forbes adds that Cosgrove came up with the idea after stepping in gum while walking in London and went on to receive nearly $20 million in backing from corporate investors. Rev7 goes on sale in the U.S. today and will hit U.K. markets sometime next year. According to The Telegraph, Britain currently spends about $240 million a year cleaning up gum.
So maybe I'm the only one who feels this way, but I am strangely fascinated when I look at the underside of a desk or a chair and I see just, you know, the big wads of chewing gum out of there, because then I immediately start thinking about how many generations. It's like rings in a tree. I start wondering if the gum is from, you know, like the Eisenhower era or something, which is sort of awesome. And this is why I don't have... I think it's why the universe keeps me, A, from having my own laboratory or having enough money to hire people at a laboratory to do things for me, because I wouldn't work on, like, curing anything or solving anything or creating a better mousetrap or whatever the hell. I would really just have them chipping off pieces of gum underneath school desks and just, you know, and just testing them just to see if we could, you know, figure out who the gum came from.
That's one of the few things that that actually makes me feel slightly germ-phobic.
Really? Is gum under the chair?
It just really, really creeps me out. The idea that this is all stuff that was like in somebody, in all these different people's mouths, and then they've jammed them up there, and they've just been sitting there decaying and attracting even further bacteria.
Okay. Yeah, no, I find it
upsetting.
See, I find it as sort of a very a tantalizing remnant of eras gone past.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, moving on. Are we at the end of science?
Yes, we are.
All right, there's your science on the march. Right here at Legion of News. Forget the Rick Emerson Show is coming up later on today at rickemerson.com. This is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
A Silverton man who learned he was about to be fired has been accused of burning his boss's car. Police say a 33-year-old man poured gasoline on the car early Saturday and set it on fire. Investigators learned the victim is the suspect's supervisor at a Silverton restaurant. The Statesman Journal reports the suspect was taken to the Marion County Jail on charges of arson, criminal mischief, and reckless burning.
Does it say what restaurant it was?
No.
Because, I mean, Silverton's a very small place. It's where Howard Hessman is from, Don Taylor.
Really?
It is. He's from Silverton, Oregon, which is one of my favorite places on earth, by the way.
He tried to pick me up at a film festival when I was 19.
I think you mentioned that to me. I was going to ask what year that would have been, but that would be rude. How old would you fathom him to have been? When would you...
I don't know, 60-something. I have no idea. I have no idea how
500?
I don't know how old Howard Hessman is, because you remember seeing him on, like, Head of the Class or whatever it was in the 80s?
Yeah.
But he was, like, a grown-up man... like playing businessmen and stuff in movies in the 60s.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think WKRP in Cincinnati started in the 70s, and he already looked like he was about 40 then.
Yeah.
So that's a good question. I really don't know how old he is. I guess it doesn't really matter for the story.
Yeah, I have no idea.
But, he is from he's from Silverton, and there's only like three restaurants in the entire town. It seems it's one of those little cities that seems to have been taken over. There's got to be some sort of virus or fungus or mold or something that is responsible for the spread of antique shops. Because you go into little towns and it's like everything. Are there really that many people who are into antiquing as an activity?
I don't know. Like, I used to work in Salem, and I would drive the sort of back road homes sometimes so I could drive through Aurora. Because I would stop at a couple of little secondhand antique shops in Aurora. Because it's really... Aurora, I think, it's one of those places that, like, it was the first settlement in this area. And they have a lot of really cool little old, you know, buildings from the original settlement,
right,
that sort of thing. But there's nothing else going on there. It's Aurora. There's an airport. That's pretty much it. And so everything is antique stores. Like, the entire town is nothing but antique stores.
That's kind of how Silverton is. And I just wonder how the economy can possibly support it unless they just sort of figure that they are between two other cities. And so you're just going to get a lot of, like bored white people stopping off to looking for, you know, carnival glass plates or something.
Yeah. People go out to Silverton to, like, look at the tulips or the irises or something every year, too. So
yeah,
I think they count on that people driving through to look at flowers traffic.
Here's the best thing about Silverton. Maybe not the best thing. One of the great things about Silverton, there is, in fact, a huge and we see this woman, Laura and I will go out there sometimes, and we'll see this woman that the city has hired to draw these fantastic sort of murals depicting various stages of the city's history all over on the walls all over town. So anywhere there's a wall that, like a large sort of brick wall that the city either owns or that isn't really being used by anybody because it's maybe in a building that, you know, that is empty, the city is just having her draw these big murals that depict various stages of Silverton's history. And one of them, I swear to God, is about a dog. It's one of those things where, and that dog was left behind in Kansas, but he walked 3,000 miles to arrive on his owner's doorstep in Silverton. And the dog's name is like Speckles or something. It's huge. It's like 40 feet long, this mural showing the story of Speckles being left behind in Kentucky, and then the owners arriving in Silverton to begin their new life in the West, then being sad that there was no Speckles, and then Speckles just showed up in town one day, and they have like a parade every year where they honor the dog. And it's sort of cute, actually.
I am in love with this story.
Down at the bottom, and there's like the little dotted line thing that shows Speckles' presumed route from like Kentucky to Silverton. And then, I swear to God, there is a huge, like five times life size reproduction of Speckles' doghouse that's sitting on the main street in Silverton.
That's awesome.
It is. It really is. And it's the sort of thing that you would normally find corny, but they're just... Silverton is the closest I've ever been to being that Stars Hollow place on Gilmore Girls. I mean, and everybody in the town is just so obviously, like, sincerely into the Speckles story. And not even in, like, a touristy way, because I don't think they sell anything. They don't even merchandise it in any way. It's just a story they love to tell people from the big city.
Alternatively, when I worked in St. Helens, there was a guy who wanted to get this big bronze statue down by the waterfront that was like either Lewis or Clark's dog. one of them, and they wanted to, and he had designed the statue and done a mock-up and wanted like a gazillion dollars for it. And so it was this huge fight, this huge battle in town, the pro-dog statue versus the anti-dog statue. And the biggest problem with the dog statue from where I stood as editor of the newspaper was that the dog, like either Lewis or Clark, whichever one dog it was, the dog's name was Seaman. You know, like, you know, a man who goes to sea.
Like a seafaring individual.
But the problem is that I was thinking, well, the biggest problem with this, and no one seems to be saying it, is that if you spend like $50,000 for this bronze statue, forever you're going to have to say, well, we're really proud of our seaman statue down by the waterfront.
Not just a seaman, a giant seaman statue.
Have you seen the bronze statue of Seaman?
Okay.
We're having a seaman unveiling because he's finished the statue.
Honey, I'd like to get a picture of you with seaman. Hold on. Don't move.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
You're listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.fm. It seems like I shouldn't follow that up by talking about the cleaning solution, but behold how I will.
How can you not?
971-533-3211. That's how you contact Mr. Michael Beatty. I'm resisting the urge to go back to the joke because it's just, here's the thing, if I just continue...
Oh, but you want to.
If I just continue just to beat that like a gong, it's not going to be... It's going to be something that I'll feel badly about later. I'll regret it. 971-533-3211.
You mean the fact we were just talking about semen?
No. Don't. Stop.
You don't want to talk
about... Nope. I'll bring it up later on in that Betty White story that we've got planned. Mr. Michael Beatty, the proprietor of The Cleaning Solution, he was actually our very first advertiser here at the Emerson News Network and on Legion of News, came on board early on. He's a longtime listener of the Rick Emerson Show and a longtime Portlander. It's a Portland business in the sense that he's keeping his money in Portland whenever possible, buying his supplies, accessories, all of that from other Portland businesses, and of course helping to support Legion of News. So if you've got something in your house that needs to be cleaned, whether it's the entryway to your home, and the entryway is here's the thing I was thinking about last night, actually, because I found myself doing this, where... And I've mentioned before that the sort of the welcome mat on the front porch of your house or whatever, that thing is always useless because it's sitting outside. And so it's just a big sodden sponge. We go through this facade, this hollowish charade of wiping our feet on the welcome mat of the front porch, which doesn't do a damn thing. It probably puts more crap back onto your shoes than it takes off. I mean, really, unless you're going to do the Burt Cooper thing and just taking your shoes off when you know, leaving them on the front porch. I mean, there's just no point to that. So you walk in, and then what do you immediately do, especially if you have, like, a tile entryway, where you just stamp your feet. You step inside and you go, oh, I got snow or dirt or whatever.
And you're supposed to stamp outside.
Yeah, but you're stamping outside, and if you're on the welcome mat, then all you're doing is just grinding more stuff into the tread on the bottom of your shoe. That's what I'm saying. There's no way to use the welcome mat outside your home that is not, in fact, making you filthier. So then you find yourself doing it again when you go inside because the only other alternative is just to go across the carpet and just for the carpet to absorb the mud and the water right out of your shoes. Anyway, I'm just saying, you get a whole winter of that or a whole summer of that, depending on how you spend your days, and you're going to find your carpet just looks unpleasant. So you get rid of that problem once and for all. You just call Michael Beatty, The Cleaning Solution, 971-533-3211, home or a business cleaning of anything your feet might touch and whatever the nature of the damage is. And, you know, if you got a brand new carpet or if you just want to, you know, get it looking good and then keep it looking good, you can put you in a maintenance program for that as well. Please tell them you heard it here on the Emerson News Network, part of Legion of News on PDX.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
It's time for entertainment news.
Fantastic. Here's your entertainment news for Tuesday.
John Lennon would have been 70 this week. John Lennon. And who better to honor his legacy and song than Ozzy Osbourne? Yes, Ozzy Osbourne, the Black Sabbath heavy metal king, has made a cover of Lennon's How, available today on Apple's iTunes to benefit Amnesty International. Osbourne says Lennon was a driving force for humanity. He also credits the Beatles as the inspiration for his musical career. A video for the song is debuting on AOL's PopEater.com. The former Beatle would have been 70 on Saturday. He was shot to death in December of 1980.
All right, I'm going to say, and I mean this sincerely, don't you think it would be awesome if Ozzy covered Eleanor Rigby?
Yes.
See? That's what I'm saying. You say Ozzy and Lennon, and people go, ugh, whatever, and then, you know, they roll their eyes. I'm telling you, that would be righteous.
Well, I started reading the story, and it was like, oh, he covered John Lennon. I was hoping it was Imagine, because I was just had this thing in my head where I was imagining, but Ozzy Osbourne singing Imagine. Which
that would be sort of great.
Would be kind of great.
Have you ever heard the Magical Misery Tour?
Mm-mm.
It's a I wish I hadn't even brought it up. Now we don't have time to talk about it. I'll play it for you later. I'll talk about it next hour.
Okay.
It is perhaps It's one of the best things that's ever existed anywhere. And anyway, it's a great Lennon reference today to get to. So we'll do that later on. We'll do it in the Rick Emerson Show.
Make a note of that.
This is Don Taylor.
Betty White scoffed at the question, does desire melt away with age? I'm waiting for that day to come.
That's great.
The 88-year-old had an interview with AARP magazine, which is in its November-December issue. Sexual desire is like aging, she said. A lot of it is up here. She was pointing at her head when she said that. White, who shares the magazine's cover with two of her You Again co-stars, Jamie Lee Curtis and Kristen Bolt, told the magazine that her first marriage was totally physical. I married my first husband because we wanted to sleep together, she says. It lasted 6 months and we were in bed for 6 months. After a disastrous second marriage, White met game show host Alan Ludden. She says they were a match made in heaven, even though she wasn't initially interested. He bought me a beautiful ring and I threw it back at him, she recalls. So he wore it on a chain around his neck. He said, I'm going to wear it until you put it on your finger. It worked, and the couple walked down the aisle in 1963 and stayed together until his death in 1981. The secret to our marriage was enthusiasm, White says. When I knew Alan was coming home, I would freshen my makeup and put on a new blouse.
Let me ask you. Well, first of all, I don't even know where to start here. What was the third woman's name? So it was Jamie Lee Curtis, Betty White, and...
I think her name's...
Is it Kristen Bolt?
Oh, Kristen Bell.
Bell. Oh, okay. I was just...
We're having some computer issues, and a couple of these things that were printed in blue didn't really actually come out. Kristen Bell.
By the way, can I just tell you this? No lie. Because I thought you were talking about Kristen Bolt, and so I was typing in, I was at Google and typed in Kristen, and then B-O-N, and it was trying to, it was like sending me right to Kristen Bowie.
Hey.
Let's see, Kristen Bell. All right,
Veronica Mars.
All right, yeah, okay, that's who I thought it was, yeah. But then, yeah, I wanted to make sure, okay. Yeah, so I was looking up, I couldn't find any pictures of Kristen Bolt, and then it was perplexing me, because it was like, something you mentioned in a story wasn't on the internet, and my brain couldn't fathom that. It was, you know, that I couldn't immediately see pictures of something online. Why the Betty White wear?
I don't know.
I mean, I don't have any problem with it. I mean, she's like 1,000 years old. Sure. I mean, live it up. What do I care? I'm just saying, was there a starting gun that I missed? That there was like a memo that went out that everyone must now begin talking about Betty White?
It was with that whole get Betty White on Saturday Night Live thing. She made it. She showed up in a couple of movies. She's been...
Like a delayed Lake Placid effect or something?
I guess, yeah.
All right.
Because Lake Placid, you know, she just kind of, that didn't really have an effect for a really long time. But then all of a sudden, boom, Betty White, foul-mouthed Betty White is back.
Is it just that she outlived all the other Golden Girls?
Maybe.
Was it just sort of a war of attrition? And just, you know, by being the last man standing, suddenly she just had all the attention?
I don't know. She did say in the story, I wanted to pull this one thing out, she said that if Alan Ludden were still alive today, she thinks they'd still be sleeping together. But if he were unavailable, she has a second choice. She said, well, I don't have a fella, she said, the 88-year-old White. But if Alan or Robert Redford were around, we'd have a very active sex life.
Okay.
Betty White.
There you go. Okay.
Albania's prime minister, film professionals, and ordinary citizens paid tribute Tuesday to British slapstick comedy pioneer Normal Wisdom, one of the few Western actors shown on television during decades of the Balkan country's grim communist isolation. Prime Minister Sali Berisha said he was deeply saddened by Wisdom's death, describing the actor as the nation's most beloved entertainer. Known in Albania for his role as acrobatic funny man Norman Pitkin, Wisdom was apparently viewed as a benign character by the regime of communist dictator Enver Hoxha. Norman Wisdom always played the character who was downtrodden by bosses of big companies, but was always successful in the end, Wisdom's agent Johnny Mansell, the AP.
So this is like their Galaxy Quest. It's like the one sort of, not Western, but I mean, you know, like the one free world program they were allowed to see. And so therefore there's like a massive statue of the guy in the middle of downtown Albania or whatever.
Yes. And now he's dead and everyone in Albania is very, very sad.
This is like that little town in Sweden where for reasons that have never really been adequately explained, there's that 15-foot-high statue of Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
And every year they have like some maypole thing where they just dance around it and twirl and bow down. And it's awesome.
Police arrested 24 Hindu nationalists after they barged onto the set of a hit Indian reality television show Tuesday to protest its inclusion of two actors from Pakistan. The Shiv Sena activist stormed the gates of the bungalow where the Big Boss show is filmed to pressure producers into removing Pakistani model Veena Malik and actor Ali Salim, who is known for his TV persona Begum Nawazish Ali.
Okay.
Lonavala's senior police officer Balraj Lengel said no one was injured, but the 24 activists have been charged with trespassing. It wasn't immediately clear if the protest disrupted filming of the show, which is taped before a broadcast. Big Boss, hosted by Bollywood superstar Salman Khan, is an Indian version of the popular international reality show Big Brother. It features disparate housemates who live together for weeks, isolated from outsiders, while vying to avoid extinction and win a cash prize. So yes, people were angry because it included Pakistanis.
Here's the good thing about this story. Occasionally, I won't say that it happens a lot, but you know, we'll have stories here every now and again where, you know, there's some group of American jackasses, like with the whole Ground Zero mosque thing, which seems to have just sort of gone away. That was just sort of being peddled as like a pre-9/11 buildup sort of a thing, and that story seems to have vanished for reasons that I don't really understand.
Yeah, I think the same number of jackasses, you know, are upset about it. But, you know, the news media has just moved on to something else.
Yeah, but that story was happening, and there's just all of these, all of these morons sort of sitting there obsessing about it and bitching about it and whatever. You just sort of hang your head and you just go, God, what a nation of freaking gum chewers we are. But then you see this story, where there's this whole, you know, this is in India, right?
Yeah.
And they're all pissed off because there's two guys from Pakistan or a man and a woman or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, it makes you realize that really idiocy is universal. It's not like we've cornered the market on it. So the morons are everywhere. So it's not just a thing that, you know, is rampant here. You are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. This is Don Taylor.
That is all of the entertainment news.
All right. There's your entertainment news for Tuesday. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show is coming up at 1 o'clock today. We will have another installment of the greatest songs ever made. And I'll mention this thing about John Lennon, and we'll make more Betty White observations, because that's what the kids like these days, or so I'm told. You can find out more about that at rickemerson.com. You can also find out more about the Emerson Grant, which is happening via our good friends at New Millennium Landscaping and Maintenance, where we give away 10 one-month subscriptions each and every month. 10 one-month subscriptions to the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy, and you can find out more about all of that at rickemerson.com. And again, the show begins around 1 o'clock. This is Don Taylor.
A Massachusetts school is getting creative when it comes to fundraising. Peabody Elementary is selling ad space on the back of its class calendars, permission slips, and school notices. School board member Beverly Griffin says she was opposed to it at first, but this idea was the best compromise compared to others presented to the board.
What is the name of this guy?
Ads.
My biggest fear was an overall fear of over-commercialization for the students, especially at the elementary level.
So what is it? So they're selling ads
on the back of class calendars, permission slips, and school notices.
So when it gets sent home to the mom, on the front it says, like, you know, your child was carrying a zip gun in the hallway. And the back side it says 2-for-1 at Domino's or whatever.
Exactly.
Okay, all right.
School board member David McGeaney came up with the idea.
I don't even know what a zip gun is.
What we're trying to do is to take advantage of a blank piece of paper that is the backside of a notice that would already be entering the home, and try to utilize it in a way that's beneficial to business owners and in turn beneficial to our school system.
I like this guy, and he's probably, this is one of those things that we're going to mention here for like 12 seconds and then we're going to move on. But in this town of wherever the hell it is, this is happening anywhere.
It's
of
in
note.
Massachusetts.
But I mean, this is probably a tempest in a teapot. I mean, this is probably going to occupy, this is probably front page news in his sleepy little hamlet of a town.
Probably, yeah. And there's all kinds of letters to the editor.
Yeah, boy.
PTA meetings with people standing up and shaking their fists.
Let me ask you this. When is the last time you opened the newspaper and read the letters to the editor?
Well, I will say I read really stupid letters to the editor. My friend Eric Snyder will often read. There's a newspaper in Utah that has primarily Mormon readers.
That would be the Deseret News, probably.
Yes, the Deseret News. And he will occasionally on Twitter link to letters in the Deseret News because it gets some of the most misguidedly angry letters that I've ever read.
That's where you realize, I mean, that's why we shouldn't be surprised at the level of discourse that takes place in most message boards. Because really, letters to the editor, that is sort of, I mean, and that's a moderated message board when you think about it. I mean, letters to the editor is not only a moderated message board, but you really only get like 5 messages a day, you know, max. And yet it always just seems to be like you have scraped through the bottom of the barrel to the sedimentary layer beneath. I mean, it's just the most repellently, stupidly off-putting, stripe of humanity that is represented there.
Well, that's because those are the only people who actually write letters to the editor. As someone who has edited a community newspaper, I can tell you, here's a secret. You want your letter to the editor printed in a community newspaper? Just send one. First of all, they don't get that many. They need to fill the space. And honestly, if they have the opportunity to print a letter from somebody new that everything's spelled correctly and the grammar's reasonably correct, and not print another letter from the five people who write something every single week, your letter will be printed.
Do they fix the grammar and spelling and letters to the editor, or do they just print them as they come in?
It depends on the mood.
Really? I mean, I can't imagine that a newspaper editor would feel good about either of those choices, because either you're just admitting that your readers are morons, or you're having to alter, the letter in some way, which seems like it violates, I don't know, one of your codes of ethics or
it's
something.
Kind of, I think it's kind of like, in a way, it's similar to editing quotes from people that you're quoting in stories. Honestly, a lot of times you will clean up what they said, just to get their point across. You know what it is they meant to say, and as long as you're not changing the actual
intent of the phrase,
you can clean it up. On the other hand, if you think the person is a complete dumbass and you want them to look like an idiot, you leave it in that he said, him and I was walking down the street, and then we saw this giant cow, and we thought, what the hell? Yeah, and you don't bother to actually change it to anything that doesn't sound stupid because, it's funnier that way.
Area Rube, Earl Wiggins. All right. Speaking of language, Dawn, and the difficulty with language,
yes.
Let's just take a moment here to acknowledge the participation of Castalia Language Centers, one of our fine business partners here at Legion of News. I will say this about Spanish. The thing about Spanish is, and somebody told me this once, and I didn't think it was true. But I remember a Spanish teacher that I knew telling me that she could teach me not necessarily to speak or to understand it, but to speak it aloud. In other words, to know how to pronounce everything in like 20 minutes. She said, 20 minutes from now, you can actually be speaking Spanish. She said, no, you're not going to have comprehension. You're not going to be able to have a conversation. But you'll be able to look at it on the page and say it correctly. And I sort of instinctively distrusted her when she said that because, you grew up learning English where it's just like so unbelievably complex and nothing makes any sense.
It's true. Spanish, the pronunciation is actually fairly easy to learn, unlike French.
Well,
French, you have to completely rethink the way that sounds are coming out of your throat. And you don't have to do that with Spanish.
It's just a lot of that sort of thing.
You have to do a lot of sounds out of your nose that just don't make any sense.
You can find out more about Spanish language classes if you are an adult via Castalia Language Center there at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. Ms. Clara Grebel is the owner and operator of Castalia Language Center. They hold classes to no more than 8 people, and it's 8 adults, which means it's people learning in the same way and at the same rate in downtown Portland. That is PortlandSpanish.com. And when you contact them, please tell me you heard it right here on Legion of News and here at PDX.FM. All right. Do you have anything brief? We got to curtain down on this. Let's do one more brief one, and then we will end today's installment of the program.
Brief and local. A local geocacher got more than he bargained for when a suspicious device he found in North Bend on Saturday turned out to be an IED. According to the sheriff's department, the Charleston man discovered the device, which looked like a pipe bomb, just before 11 a.m. It was perched on a small sand dune on Four Dune Access Road, about 3 miles from the BLM boat ramp. A sheriff's deputy located the device and determined it to be a possible improvised explosive device. They called the bomb squad, who came out before 5 p.m. The device was rendered harmless in a matter of minutes. Upon further investigation, the bomb technicians described the device as a viable IED. They said it had been tampered with, and it could have caused serious physical injury to the person holding it or standing nearby. The device's construction will not be released as the investigation is ongoing.
And with that, we bring to the its glorious end another... I'm sorry, I just did a thing there. We bring to a glorious conclusion another exciting installment of Legion of News. My syntax is just all over the place today. I'm like the king of transposition on this
Tuesday.
I know. I brought
You're bringing us all down.
My family name, Don. All right. Thank you for joining us for this installment of Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Executive producer Bruce Agler. Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemerson.com. As always, thank you for joining us for this
Legion of News on PDX FM.